Accession number 9489, Reel 2.
Tom Phillips, take 2. Yes, you were explaining about the mining activity in the Festubert Pollock area.
Yes, the British, the South Wales Miners Company only, they used to be the best miners in the world. The Germans used to try and blow our front line, but they never did. We had that stamp once a week. And they were the very lights going up. I never saw fighting for the creature then. I owe my life to the Welsh miners there.
What were you actually doing while this was going on? Would you have been in a machine gun?
Yes, we were in the front line, ready to stop the Germans, or we were going no man's land after them, and with our machine guns.
So
in no man's land sometimes, and
if you were in no man's land, what sort of machine gun post did you have?
We were laying low, hidden, if there's shell holes, anything, and in case old Jerry would try and break through. But these Welsh miners, they're wonderful. And I tell you about when I met them in the Stanham. Do you know what they were singing? Light beer. I never used to drink anything. We were only there about half an hour with them. I didn't know they were there until I found them out there. We had a few minutes to spare from the second or third line of defence. And they were singing in the pub. About the old sow, big fat.
Perhaps you could sing it for me.
The big fat Welsh miner, singing it, and his belly, everything moving like an old sow, sleeping. Now here, old man, went to play. He goes up here. I used to say, and your man was a jolly old man. I used to say, imitating an old sow singing. Well, we were all flat out on that old stamina. That's the first time I ever saw a stamina, the last one. And if you got Welsh miners as your pal, the most generous, most and selfish lot.
Did you have many losses at this time? You know, we're talking about early 1916.
Yes.
Did you lose many of the...
Yes. We lost quite a lot there, yes. Now then, that was April and May. I told you, I was chasing the rats there in my spare time, enjoying that. They used to come down the dugout, give the chaps a chance to sleep. In the second line, after being all night in the front line, being blown to bits there. And some of the rats used to come, it cut one fellow's toes. We were afraid to take our boots out there. But I wasn't. I was fond of chasing rats. And who should come out there, about May, I think it was old Lloyd George and the Prince of Wales, you know, Duke of Windsor. I told you about that today. And then they came out. We'd been in the thick of it all night, and just got in a rest, and to save the boys to have a good sleep, free from the rats, I was with a big old stick or my rifle, and I don't know, chasing them, and who should turn up? I don't know who the blinking general was, the head office, but I knew Lloyd George and the Duke of Windsor. So they shook hands with me, and they stayed there watching me chasing those rats. They were laughing like hell. And it transpires, that's the only, they wouldn't risk going to the front line, remember? And I was told afterwards, I knew the Duke of Windsor was decorated with a military medal for watching me killing rats, chasing rats. They were in their doubles, you know, I had them for 10 minutes. They never saw any of their fellows down the dugouts. And I had a lot of fun with them. And after the war, I was told that it was said that that he had won the MM, and it was in the second line of trenches. He could have a nasty few shells coming in there, but it was quite a lovely morning. And so afterwards it was mentioned, but they didn't mention where he won it. The chasing the rats. So that's all right. Now then.
Now, what happened to you after when you moved from that area?
Wait a minute now. We were in training there, and then the Portuguese First Division came out. Oh, weak-kneed lot, and they were dressed very much like Jerry, a bit lighter. Oh, and the transport was terrible, one pulling against the other. And so we had to train them in the front line with us machine gunners, and they were infantry, of course. And when there's a big German bombardment coming, these mini warfares coming over and things like that, oh, the devils used to leave their posts, so we had to turn our machine guns to keep them in the line. They were no good. So they couldn't get used to the shelling. You've got to get used to it first. You've got to make yourself at home. So we trained them, and we left that section. I left that section then, but they were good. They used to carry little sharp knives, you know, for in close fighting, for stabbing. They were pretty good at that, I believe, but oh, they had a lot to learn. We tried to teach them, but they were not much good.
Are you saying that they couldn't stand the shelling, the shells?
They were demoralized in a way. I don't. They may have got more used to it after they left. We left them. I think they took over that part of Vanti, Fürstenberg and Halleck. They were the first Portuguese troops. I think it was 16 before I left. Then that was all right. I was in the line, never, no cleaning, no change of clothes, full of chats. Oh dear. Buried in your skin, no chance of washing. We're in a terrible state. Same socks, everything. We had the food used to come in a big thing. What do you call it? Not buckets. What do you call them? See, that's it. And we used to go and we had little dixies, and we used to eat out that. And the Portuguese, we used to call them pork and beans for the Portuguese. And they used to put everything, other sweet or anything, in with it. Mix it all up. Yes, mix up everything. And so, I don't know how they got on afterwards, but I'll tell you something about them later on. So, now then, during that time, the observation balloons up above, watching the German machine observation, could see the section or the front line of both. You see, they had observation balloons, saucer balloons, a fellow in a basket. You heard about it, did you? Now then, that's a funny thing happened there. It was a lovely day, about June, I think. There, one of our airmen shooting down these balloons, set them on fire, machine gun, you know, single aeroplanes then, with a machine gun in, you know, small. Only one fellow in with a small machine gun. Setting these on fire, oh, what the hell is happening there? And he's doing well. At last, three German ACs, aeroplanes, from above stooped on him. And he got the fellow, I'll tell you who he was afterwards, he got the two down, but the other one was too much for him. he shot him. A sheriff went first, and he had time to jump to have his parachute. And the wind was blowing towards our line. At the time, not a big wind. Let's get the poor fellow. He's coming. Damn the old Jerry with the rifle trying to get him down. No, he's coming. And he came, and he landed just behind where we were, the front line, not the front, they were beyond the third line. And I was wondering who that little devil was. And somebody said, he was a Welshman. And the first thing he did when he landed, let's get another bloody aeroplane. Now then, I didn't know at the time who he could be. At last, after he came back from the war, I married that lovely girl from Carmarthen, Tafina Rees. And I married her in 1934. We were a bit late in getting married because her father was a widower. I was walking the streets in King Street, Carmarthen, down about 1935. And who should come to meet me? It was Olira Jones, the famous fellow, aeroplane fellow. You know, I heard about Olira Jones, Tuffy Jones. And wait now then. Well, Olira Bach, I said, I used to do his homework. He never bothered about lesson. He used to, those balloons fired out. I think he shot down about 14. Well, I think, I don't know much. And he explained then, oh, I wish I'd met you then, Olira. I said, he was my best pal. We were in the same form. I used to do his homework, and we were in the rugby team. We lost about 8 out of the 15 rugby team in Carmarthen Grammar School, all joined up, big pals. Fancy Olira there, I wish I'd met him there. And he was the fellow that got us, he was decorated all over, you know.
I believe you left the 8th Division. Yes. I believe you left the 8th Division, didn't you, Tom, to join the 49th Division?
No, I was in the 8th then, when this happened.
Yes, but...
And now then,
yes.
After being there, I was sent back to Dieppe. I don't know what's happening now. Single fellow from the... they were taking some up here and there. It was... In June, I think, I went down Dieppe again. I was sent up the line towards Arras towards July, the Somme offensive. I didn't know it was going to be there. I was the only fellow sent up from the front again, and I joined the famous 49th Yorkshire lads, Duke of Wellington's Yorkshire Light Infantry, York and Langs. And what was I going to tell you? Oh, they were great lads. And we are ready for the...
What was great about them, Tom?
Yes?
Why did you think they were great lads, the 49th
Division? Oh, you got used to them. They were... those Oxford lads take a lot of beating. And next to us was our pals, the 38th Welsh, going for Mametz Wood. And we were next to them going... for Thiebel, which was a stronger defence force for the Jerry. I don't know when the hell why they sent us to the strongest part of the German under Hindenburg. That was a famous general. Oh, the British general had no leg to stand on. He knew what he was up to. And he used to protect his men as much as he could. They had much better trenches and places sheltered down 40 feet down. So the big affair started off. I was just in time to join the 49th, and I got used to them. I was with the machine gunners, and so we were going for Thiebel, and the big guns behind us, the artillery. The long-distance artillery were excellent, but the light and field gun artillery, a lot of those that were firing were knocking our own men out. They, all the guns were out of, the barrels were out, I think it was the fellows hadn't been trained properly, killing our own men. So we had an old major, we must have been between 35 and 40, leading us. At last I said, "Damn, this man doesn't know much," I said to the boys. And I said, "I can't, damn it all, there's something wrong with him." We were advancing now. We covered nearly 2 miles through the German defences, but the wiring, barbed wiring, and the German machine gunners popped up from the 40 feet down, ready for us. But on the way, there's no mention about the Somme. Did you read about the Somme offensive in July the 1st? Well, they didn't mention what we had to go through. Jerry, the wind was blowing towards our line. So he used the biggest chlorine and tear gas, gas attack on us by drums and artillery. Well, we had to lie flat down with our helmets on for about 3 or 4 hours. Gave Jerry time to get the machine gun ready for us. And as long as the gas mask was a good protector against chlorine, as long as you got it on straight away. The trouble was, there was one or two chaps with not very good chest. I remember he was going off his head, he had a whiff of chlorine, couldn't put it on. Very often I had to stop him from going off his head to pull it off down him. I saved many, one or two men like that. So we were going on all right after the gas attack. At last, we met first aid ambulances taking the wounded, and at last this old major, what won't do, that's all I could get out of the devil. I spotted him now, he had become shell shock, and I shouted to the boys, "Oh boys, get rid of this fellow, he's shell shock, he's no damn good, and we must get somebody else to lead us." I was the fittest man there. I was in great form, you know. I used to lead the fellows, and they were getting down in the dumps, you know. I said, "Come on, boys. I'm taking off my blinking tin hat off my head, and to cover my joystick," and that brightened them all up. I was walking with nothing on my head, and my tin hat covering my joystick. I don't mind losing my head, but I want to keep my joystick. And that brightened them all, bucked them all up. And we were attacking all the time. We were losing quite a lot. And we captured prisoners, remember, in batches of 50s or more. I don't know, we didn't count them. And in September...
What did you do with the prisoners?
Somebody else would take charge of them, back to the rear. So, Thibault, it was the strongest position. They talk about Mamet's, that was bad enough. The Welsh, the South Wales borders, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, all Welsh division was on our right always. And their flank was held up. They were disturbing our advance, but they couldn't help it. It was terrible for them. They lost a lot of men there, and we lost a lot of men, but we were all right, and the German machine guns firing everywhere. And in September, the rain came down. We were so swamped, all mud everywhere. They should have started the offensive earlier and not go for the strongest part of the German line. All Hindenburg knew what he was doing. They had such wonderful intelligence. They were much more intelligent. Dick's intelligence. They were much more ahead of us. So our fellows were, our generals were no damn good at all. And so we got rid of all what didn't do, what I sacked a major. That's one thing. Not many can tell you sacking a major.
I was
only a machine gunner on all for a tanner a day. It went up to a bob a day in 1917.
So how far would you have advanced in the Thiepval area?
We advanced nearly 2 miles. That's all.
And you were stopped by the Hindenburg line?
Yes, the Hindenburg line we were trying to take. It was the strongest part of the whole British front, or the French front. They shouldn't have gone for that. I can tell you where they should have gone. And later on, now then, we had to come back, and who should take the major place was Captain Husband, a Scottish lad. The 51st was on our left, the 49th in the centre, the English, the Welsh on the right, and the Scottish, lovely boys, the Highlanders, great lads. We belonged to the 1st Army Corps. The 49th, we were 146, 147, 148 Brigade. We were in the 14 right. Now then, Husband came. Oh, I talked to him. Dear, he was great. And he kept with us throughout that stunt. After we failed to go any further there, we pushed on to Bowman Tarmill, to the left, and the Scottish to the left further on. We were there for some time. Then the higher ground. Then from there we went to Gommecourt. That was still higher, but we were in a hidden little road. And we were in Gommecourt, and still call it the Somme Offensive. That's where the Somme Offensive should have started from Bowman Tarmill further to Gommecourt, Arras, and further to the left, where the German defences were not strong, so strong. It was known as the Drocken Kient line, part of the Hindenburg line. But that's where we should have been, attacking, not the strongest part. They didn't know what they were going to do. They didn't mind how many men they threw away. Hindenburg.
How many men do you think you lost in the 49th Division, yes? Tom? How many men were lost from the 49th?
Oh, we were losing. I'll tell you about Passchendaele later on. We must have been losing about 15 or 20,000, or more than that in a week. But they were mostly a lot of wounded. Not the same as Passchendaele. I'll tell you what Passchendaele was. So,
well, was it?
Captain Husband came. I talked to him very much, and he used to be guided by me. I don't know why, but I had a great knowledge of things. I had the spirit there to know what. I was guided, as I told you, by divine spirit. It wasn't my courage at all. I was guided by something above. What fear was not myself.
No.
The divine spirit. But the lads didn't know that. I used to carry a little English hymn book here from Camarthen Grammar School.
Tom, Could I ask you about the...
And in my spare time, I still learn lovely hymns, you know.
Could I ask you about the casualties of the dead? You know, what was your impression of this on the battlefield, the dead and the wounded?
It was a total loss of life. We were thrown in like, the cream of the manhood of Britain and France were thrown away. Mistakes. If they had started off from where I said Gommicott, now then, we're in Gommicott. We wanted to a dugout with a big, one thing was holding, the thing was a huge stem of a huge tree, part of the dugout. Now then, are we waiting there, ready to see what next? Jerry was used to send, he was sending, what do you call it, a lot of chlorine gas attacks at the time. So this was all right. Then one evening, we had a hell of a shell. Went through almost the big stem and my gun fixed, my rifle and was hanging upside down. And the shell, I was sitting opposite it. And the big sprint of the shell knocked my rifle, the stem, clean off. And that saved my life there. Fancy, I didn't know now. I thought I'd be for court-martial. I had no gun, machine gun, and my the rifle and bayonet. I had the bayonet in two. So I reported it. And from there on, they did away without the rifle and bayonet, and we were issued with... what do you call it?
Revolvers.
Weberly revolver. We had no training at all in it, but no matter about that.